Hello and welcome back to Portrait of an Editor. I am Francis Lombard. I've heard many people say no one buys comic book anthologies. Well, this might not be so true. For several years, DC Comics has had a successful run with its 80-page giant seasonal anthologies. Alex Antone, who edited some of the earlier issues, joined me in discussing why these anthologies are so fun and successful. A heads up, Portrait of an Editor has a Patreon page, and this past week, I've been moving a lot of my older episodes over to that page. So if you're looking for all the episodes from 2017 up to probably pretty much 2022, that's where you can find them, and it only really costs $1 a month to be able to have access to all of them. Also, as you'll hear later, we have a sponsor for the first time. So enjoy. So Alex, welcome back to Portrait of an Editor. Both of us are dealing with, I guess, I got the white snow and you got rain in California. So
that's right. It's been wet for many weeks, but it's a nice change of pace.
So we got a good day to do a podcast, and thank you for coming back. And the last podcast, which I think was like a couple years ago now, you mentioned, I think, or in emails, that you were involved in DC Comics sort of launching of their seasonal 80-page giants. Now, it is a seasonal thing. You can't get through previews every month, it seems, without an 80-page giant coming out. As we record this, April has their Ape Roll special. And then the next one is a summer one, which I just saw. I forgot, but I just got two in my monthly shipment of comics, How to Lose Guy Gardner in 10 Days, which was actually the Valentine's Day.
Yep.
And there was another one, I think a Christmas one that I got. No, well, it's not really the 80-page giant, but it is sort of, I group it together, the DC Powers, which was sort of the Black History Month. The second time they've done it, they've also done the Asian superheroes. So looking in research, you're involved in the first three, and now I can't find my note, but you were doing a Halloween one, which, where did I put everything? Shoot, you probably recall it better than I do.
I'm happy to walk you through the origin of everything.
I did prepare for this.
But that's okay. No, you know, thankfully I remember most of it. It's been a while at this point.
You had a Halloween one, a summer special, and I think a winter special.
So it actually all started with the, I think it was 2018 holiday special, maybe 17, not sure of the year. But that was something that other editors had been handling. And for whatever reason, it got thrown my way that one year. Maybe the other editor was too busy or something. And so they were like, Alex. And at the time, I don't know if he was actually in our group, but Dave Wilgus was our assistant editor, and he's very talented and good editor. And he was, it fell to me and Dave basically to put together this, this holiday special. And I think we were excited because we both really like short stories. Actually, if we're just kind of generally talking anthologies, my first ever series that I edited was an anthology series called Adventures of Superman, which was like a digital first series that that I was really, really happy with. And it was really fun, and it was one of the best things that could have happened to me as a new-ish editor, was work on an anthology, because you get to work with so many people in such a short amount of time and really start to build your Rolodex. And you are definitely, I'll get to why anthologies are great for talent, but also as an editor, like, you have to evaluate and move quickly as an anthology editor, or at least in the way that DC works. So I think it really sharpened my skills to be able to just, like, let's start with an 8-page short story or a 10-page short story or whatever we were doing there. So yeah, flash forward a bunch of years to the holiday special, and Dave and I were like, well, we may only get one chance at this, so let's just, like, kill it. Let's do our best to just make this, like, the absolute best holiday special we could possibly make. And so we did. I was trying to look for it earlier, but I couldn't find it. But I know we had, like, a total murderer's row of talent in there. Like, I think we had a Tom King short story in there. I think we had a Greg Rucka short story in there. I think we had probably James was in there, James Tinian, you know, great artists. I think I want to say we had a wraparound story by Jeff Lemire that was like a Constantine thing, where it was like Constantine meets Superman. That may have been a different one, but we definitely had a, we kind of had like a, you know, a host, yeah, for lack of a better term.
I've never seen that one then. I have to go a little more.
Okay, yeah, go. That was the very first one we did. Okay. Just know that the lineup was completely stacked, and I got really, I got in trouble for spending too much money.
Because you had to match everybody's page rate, basically?
Well, because, yeah, you know, the Tom Kings of the world are quite expensive. So, you know, Greg Rucka is not cheap. So, and, you know, I think at the time, one of the things I enjoyed the most at DC was taking, and I may have talked about this last time, was taking things that nobody had any expectations for and just trying to make it like really great. And that was, you know, definitely the case here, where I guess I always felt like I might not get any more than one chance to do this. So like, I want to try to just make it the absolute best version of it I can be and, or I can make, and what's the version that I would want to read. So anyway, that was the first one, and it was, while I did get in trouble from the finance guy, I guess people liked it, and so they said, let's keep going. And then the next one was a Valentine's Day special. So that was 80, I think it was 80 pages or 100 pages. It was probably 80, because it's been 80 for a long time. And I think we did like an 8-page intro story that sort of spread out, so it was like 4 pages at the beginning, 4 pages at the end or something like that. And then all the rest of the stories were 8 pages. And then we did a Valentine's Day special. I think it was Valentine's Day, called Young Monsters in Love, which was...
I haven't gotten that one yet. Okay, that's okay. Another one I could go looking for.
Go check it out, because this one has Swamp Thing kissing the Bride of Frankenstein on the cover, and Frankenstein's monster walking through the door going like, oh my god, my wife with and Swamp Thing is like, you know, has flowers all over him. It's you know, horrific and romantic, and I think the idea was Dan DiDio was a big like horror guy. And so I think the very first one was sort of a Dan DiDio brainchild. And then we got Kelly Jones to do the cover, and that was really great. And then, kind of went from there with romance stories with a horrific twist or vice versa. So that was really fun. And that one, I think, really performed well. I think I probably kept that one on budget after getting in trouble the first time. So from there, it was, I think Dan at the time was so happy with how it all turned out that he was like, let's do this seasonally and go ahead and go, guys. So I was like, well, okay, let's do it. And so you were mentioning like how to lose a Guy Gardner in 10 days and these crazy titles. Like half of the fun of doing these anthologies was coming up with the titles, because everyone is a new title. I don't think we've done any repeats.
Maybe none of the partially? Seasonal ones. None of the seasonal ones have been repeats. So like celebrate certain months or time that are like are numbered. But like the did you do the one? Was the next one the villain one for Happy New Year? It was like a Christmas.
Yes, New Year's Evil. New Year's Evil. I think I came up with that one. That was
House of Sinister or something was another Halloween one.
Secrets of Sinister House, probably, which was like an old DC title.
Yeah, there's some of those pop up every so often. Yeah, or like
which makes sense. Or like Dark. I think maybe we did Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love. Was that? Or maybe that was a different book. Anyway, but yeah, there's a bunch of these old DC titles that I don't know if it's to keep like the copyright or whatever. But
that's what I was thinking.
We gotta recycle them every now and then. But then, yeah, sometimes we'd come up with our own things. Like I came up with one that I actually left before I got to do it, but it was called The Doomed and the Damned, and I was like, ooh, that's cool. I like that one. Dave Wilgus came up with Crimes of Passion.
I haven't seen that one. Okay, that's awesome.
I think this may have been the last one that I did before I left, the joke is that I'm a one-trick pony, because on every single Valentine's Day cover, it's like two people kissing and the third person walking in. I didn't have any other ideas. And it was just, all right, well, now it's going to be, Nightwing and Catwoman, and, you know, Batman's all upset. So I'd love to track down the other one. But
well, that's like classic.
I started getting heat
romance.
For it.
The yes. Classic romance comics. That's just for sure. Awesome. You know,
and I loved romance comics, and I loved, you know, was so excited when I was working at DC and got the, like, I don't know if it was Showcase style, like the big volume of Young Love. Like I love those comics. They're so they're so fun. They're so fun to read. There's like a weird time capsule to like the era in which it was made. And they're, yeah, I don't know. I'm just a sucker for, I think I'm a sucker for romance in general, but there's that like added level of like kind of cool retro nostalgia that the old Young Love comics have that I just think is hilarious.
Because one of the ones I have that I haven't gotten to is a young, called Young Love or something like that. That thinks Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy on the cover.
I'm sure they went for it at some point since I left. But yeah, I mean, so I guess now I'll get into kind of like the philosophy of what we were doing.
Were the sales good? Because
the sales were great, and it was
anthologies never work, but these seem to be working because
absolutely. I mean, well, part of it is keeping it on budget. That's important, despite my failure in the first time. You know, we definitely want to keep the budget reasonable, but it's a $10 comic, which is not cheap. It's almost basically a graphic novel price. And yeah, they always sold well enough to justify their existence, and probably more so because that's why they kept wanting to do them. I don't know that you could do it at a place that doesn't have DC or Marvel characters, you know, like if you could just throw, I mean, you'd have to really have some hook that was special. You know, Creepshow obviously is an example of a successful anthology, but like it's not a $10 anthology; it's a regular sized comic book. So, they always sold really well, and that's why we kept doing them. And I always saw a lot of different layers to why we did them, and because I think they helped the company a lot, they helped the talent a lot, way more than just the bottom line, because I think in the way that we put them together, like I always, you know, we're constantly looking for new talent at DC. It's really important to find those new talent. And the best way to really understand, like, if you really want to work with somebody is by working with them. But like giving them a series or even giving them a one shot can be, you know, it's a lot for somebody that's brand new. So giving them an eight page short story, either like as somebody that is a big name that has worked at another company, but you're trying to get back to DC and just be like, hey, here's eight pages, do whatever you want. Have a nice time, tell the story you always wanted to tell, but like, you know, you couldn't do it or whatever. Or if you had one idea for a Superman short story and it happened to have romance in it or horror in it or whatever, like go for it. This is the place to do it. That was, you know, an easy way to get people back into the flow. Like I think G. Willow Wilson's, one of her first things after coming back from Marvel was doing some anthology stuff. Mm-hmm. So, it was a good place for that, and a good place to try out new talent and go like, if you can do an 8-page short story, then maybe you can do a full issue. And if you could do a full issue, then maybe you can do a mini series. And if you do a mini, you know, it just goes on from there. So there was a lot of people that we tried out and it didn't work. But like we wanted to give them the full experience of working on a comic book with an A-level publisher like DC and see what they can do, put a little bit of pressure on them and see how they can handle it. See how they dealt with, like, if they got notes, you know, how they dealt with that. It was sort of the farm system to a certain degree, which was great. And I think, you know, we talked about last time, for those following the thread of the Alex Antone podcast, nobody's doing that. But I was always big into, new talent and finding new talent, fostering new talent. And that was, 'cause that was my first job at DC was new talent administrator. So the fun of like, if you bring in a new artist or a new writer, you pair them with like an established artist or writer and really like give them not only the exposure to DC, but also the exposure to other like working professionals that are doing good work. And you know, that has a big impact too, because now you're, you know, if you're somebody that's just getting started and you're working with somebody whose work you've been reading for a long time, that's meaningful. That's a cool experience. And that hopefully is motivating to get up and do the best work you can do. So, go ahead.
I do like the element. That is one thing that appeals to me. And other times I'm like, do I stop getting these? Is that hit or miss aspect of it?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I noticed is like with your stuff is like some of the stories, like, you know, like the first page in, oh, this is good. There's something here that resonates with the character. And as a reader, and I'm just coming as somebody reading these, really more just reading them, you know,
yeah.
I'm not even looking at like the sausage making aspect of it. It's like, it engages you right away. And that's impressive. Yep. And I'm like, and I'm yeah. looking at this name and I'm like, I've never seen this name before. And then I move on and it's somebody who I've seen, Garth Ennis is writing this. Oh, wow. And then it is exactly what I expect from Garth Ennis. But it's that hit or miss kind of aspect that you're like, what am I unwrapping now?
Sure.
You know, and that's, I think that's what keeps me back. I'm like, who might I discover? Yeah. As you said, who might I discover who later on? I'm like, oh, I need to come back to this guy.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so I think telling an 8-page short story, you have to be economical. And I think comics in general is an economical, format. So if you can't do an 8-page short story, if you can't tell a solid, you know, obviously you can't do something crazy with 8 pages, got to keep it relatively simple, but the best stories that I find are pretty simple. So I think giving somebody the chance to sink or swim, format is good. Go ahead.
Other than the theme of that season, were there any other elements that you were trying to, as an editor, wanted the people to hit? Or is it character motivated? Or an action? Or were there things that you went in there as an editor for this, you know, okay, it's, let's say, Valentine's Day, the seasonal one. You know, yeah. I want more character stuff. Or
100%.
Number one? And okay.
Yeah, every especially when I was at DC, every single story had to feel, you know, if you're telling a Nightwing story, it has to feel like a Nightwing story. It's, you can't just swap in some other character and have it be the same story, because they all have to be character driven, or at least start with some kind of character hook. Obviously you're not going to like kill off a character. You're not going to do anything crazy in an anthology that's like sort of adjacent to continuity. But it was really important, because you had to come at these stories from a place of character. And that was part of the fun and part of the challenge, is like, can I find somebody that can say something new about this character through the lens of this holiday, or through the lens of this season? You know, what would a vacation look like for Beast Boy? You know, what would a vacation look like for the different Teen Titan? It would be, and sometimes we did, you know, pairing two characters together, kind of a Brave and Bold style thing, which is what are two interesting characters put together in one place and see how they react to each other. So yeah, we always started from a very character driven place, despite the fact that it was a Valentine's Day anthology, so every story had to have some element of romance. But there's also lots of different angles on romance. So it was, you know, married couples stories, LGBTQ stories, first dates, all kinds of stuff that you can come at these stories from and these characters from. So it was, we tried to get a good range of everything. Holidays, not just Christmas, go with Hanukkah stories, go with Kwanzaa stories, go with more sort of general holiday stories. What is the holiday season in Kandak look like? You know, it was that kind of stuff for sure.
Did you, as you progressed through it, what was the thing that you, was there anything you jettisoned an approach, or was there one thing that you realized that they all have to hit? What was, as you started developing these, you know, and like, okay, I got to stay within budget, but what other things did you notice that really worked for putting the anthology together that could continue your track record?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think keeping it simple is probably the most important thing that we learned, because I think some people would come in with very ambitious ideas, or even ideas that, you know, for a 20-page story wouldn't be ambitious, but for 8 pages are definitely ambitious. And I think the stories that got away from us were usually the stories that had, you know, more than a couple elements to it. You kind of need a setup. It's almost like telling a joke too. Like, you need kind of a setup and a punchline in every single story. And I think when you're trying to do too much, or when you're trying to add too many characters, you know, it'd be very tough to do a Justice League story in 8 pages. You could do it, but you'd have to be very good, you know. And again, especially for a lot of the writers and artists that were doing this, some of them were A-list people, and we always tried to have A-list people in each issue because we wanted people to get their money's worth ultimately, and we needed some total bangers and to make sure that, you know, we started each issue off really strong and closed out each other issue really strong. But yeah, like you said, it's an anthology. It's expected that there's going to be some hits and some misses, and you hope to have, you know, I found usually that like in 10 stories or 8 stories or whatever we had, like 2 or 3 were great. The, you know, 3 or 4 were pretty good. And then you'd have 2, 1 or 2 that were kind of like, all right, well, we tried, it didn't quite pan out. But we did our best and everybody, you know, made some money. And, I think we got the best version of the story that we could get, but yeah, sometimes things just don't work. And that is part of the fun and the appeal of these anthologies, which is being able to say, yeah, that one didn't work, but it's not the end of the world, because it's one story in a 80-page giant. And, you know, if somebody thought, oh yeah, I didn't like that story, but I like these other 7, they're not going to walk away, I think, feeling like, oh, I got ripped off. And we never wanted anyone to feel like they got ripped off, because, you know, that's no good. What, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, what did DC think about these when, you know, because, I don't know, from what I gathered when I was working in anthology, everybody like, oh God, not again, you know, or, you know, it's just doomed to flop anyways, because no one buys them. But it seemed like DC has embraced them, you know, like I just said at the beginning, at the top of the story, like it can't get through an issue of previews or whatever they're in nowadays, because they're not in previews anymore, but without an anthology popping up for order. I mean, what was it? What was going on? Did you notice something that was going on? They're like, oh, maybe this approach to an anthology is the approach that works, you know, both creatively and financially?
Yeah, I mean, we just kept doing them because we keep doing them. And like I said, they all made money. So, and I do think, kind of having a place for creators to try stuff out in a low impact way is really, really valuable, to the company.
I've never been a big coffee fan, so I don't like drinking it throughout the day because of how the jitters fracture my focus. Energy drinks have never worked for my taste buds or heart health, so I've always been on the lookout for something to help me keep a good energy level throughout a full day of creative endeavors, chores, and a day job. After discovering Magic Mind, I now drink it a few hours after my morning coffee. It helps me stay focused and creative throughout my busy day. With its all-natural ingredients, I don't have to worry about a lot of sugar getting into my diet, and the benefit of lion's mane mushrooms, which is one of its ingredients, and it reduces anxiety and inflammation while supporting cognition. As a whole, it really just helps me stay focused throughout the day on the many tasks I have in front of me, and after taking it for a couple days, the overall effects basically were pretty straightforward, and really, I do not miss the ups and downs of drinking coffee. You can find Magic Mind Energy Drink at magicmind.com/portraitofaneditor. That's magicmind.com/portraitofaneditor, which is all one word. And with the code ANTIX20, ANTIX20, you also get up to 56% off your first subscription or 20% off your one-time purchase. That's ANTIX20, ANTIX20, for 56% off. It also works if you're already a subscriber. You save on your next subscription payment. So if you're like me and not a big coffee fan and looking for something to keep you focused, then I recommend Magic Mind. Once again, you can get it at magicmind.com/portraitofaneditor. That's magicmind.com. Portrait of an editor, all one word, and get up to 56% off your subscription for the next 10 days with the code ANTIX20, ANTIX20.
And DC's done anthologies for a lot longer before this, right? Like Batman Black and White is one of the best anthologies like ever made. And, you know, Mark Chiarello edited those and did incredible work at DC. And the farther back you get to DC history, you realize like, oh, wow, like most comics were sort of anthologies, most comic books. And yeah, the format got away from publishing for a while, for sure. But like, there were still anthologies being published. Dark Horse Presents was one that was published for a really, really long time. And those were great. Spawned some new ideas for Dark Horse, which is cool. I think DC has gotten more towards trying to make the stories in the DC anthologies feel important and like work into other stories. Good idea, and we just never really did. It was more just like, let's just have a good time, and if we're having a good time, then people hopefully will read them and also have a good time, and it'll just justify its existence because it's very good. But I think, yeah, there's like, I think the anthology that Jessica Chen did, the Asian anthology, that also launched one of the characters in the Asian DC line. I'm just trying We Are Legends, I think, is what it's called.
We Are Legends, and also, what is it, the Monkey King 2 was launched there?
It may have launched Monkey King. I can't remember.
Yeah,
I
wasn't Monkey King.
But I'm almost positive that it did. So, yeah, there's ways to do it in a way that make them feel more essential, which is good. We just never did that because I guess we didn't have to, and we were doing a good enough job with them that we could just keep going in the format that we did. But yeah, I mean, if the question is how can DC do anthologies when most the standard thought is that most anthologies don't sell and that nobody cares, I think it's probably the strength of the DC that people are interested in. I don't think you could do an original anthology quarterly and expect the same results. And I think there are people that just love the fact that I certainly do. I like seeing what they called each one every single time. It's just it makes me laugh. There have been ones, there was I can't remember what it was called, but yeah, it was the I think it was called Young. It was a Young Love one, but whatever they twisted Young Love into just made me just die with laughter.
Was it Young Villains in Love or something?
I can't remember, but it was so great. And I think there was the cover was like an old, you know, kind of like Fabio style cover with Aquaman and Harley Quinn.
I had that.
It was great.
Young Heroes in Love. I'll have to post it.
There you go. Yeah, this, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I have that cover. And of course, you know, Amanda Connor, it's great to see her doing these covers on all the stuff because she's
perfect for that. Yeah.
Her timing and her the expressions, just her artwork is so, you could just stare at this still picture and laugh, you know, and just all the details she puts in and just the character representation. It just, she does, these things were made for her, really.
Yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, as I'm talking about these and remembering all these, like they're just making me smile and laugh. And I think there's something to that. Like, I think every single one of these comics was very fun. Like in a world where, you know, a lot of comics are pretty dark and serious, and I love dark and serious, just like the rest of everybody. Like, I think a fun $10 comic that gives you quite a lot. You get a lot of different creators, gives a lot of different characters. You get everything you want out of it. And you can just sit and read it on your own time. It's not like, you know, I don't know. It's the kind of thing that I would have loved to have seen like in digest format and pick up at a grocery store, you know, if that was still a thing. Like there's something very just relaxing and chill and fun about these comics. I remember when I did Adventures of Superman, they actually did turn one of my stories into a digest format, which was cool.
Oh, nice.
But, I don't know if they still do that anymore. I'm pretty sure they don't, but it was, yeah, I think people want to have a nice time. And I think every single one of these comics is at the very least a nice time. And hopefully people think that's worth $10.
So we got like 5 minutes left and you're doing Creepshow and in your letter column in one of the last Creepshows for 2023 into 1 month into 2024, you're like rattling off, oh, maybe we could do a Creepshow. Well, you already did a Christmas one, but you know, Valentine's Day Creepshow stuff. So, and you're the editor on that. What did you take over to that? And are you looking at Creepshow as possibly continuing your adventures in anthology? I mean, Creepshow is a series, just a one comic with two stories each, but it seems to be doing well. I'm enjoying it. I'm like, it's just a lot of fun. It's a fun read and it really stays within what Creepshow is all about. So
yeah, it's, I mean, it's, it's been so much fun, and I was really, really happy when I got to start working on Creepshow. John Moisen was the editor of Creepshow initially at Skybound, and basically right as he was getting it up and running, he left Skybound, so then I took it over. Edited volume one. We got nominated for an Eisner. That was pretty cool. I don't think any of the DC anthologies I ever worked on got nominated for anything. So that was very cool. Same deal. Like try to fill it with people that you want to work with, people that you're not sure about but are intrigued by, a couple of heavy hitters. Get a Garth Ennis story, get a Becky Cloonan story, get a Chris Burnham story. Like these, you know, make sure you have some bangers, like I said. But then, you know, and maybe somebody like Zoe Thorogood, who's, you know, mm-hmm. really, really interesting new creator that I think a lot of people are excited about, but has her own stuff going. Like, hey, do you want to just tell a 10-page short story? And the difference between this and the DC stuff is these are all originals. Which is unique. And I think you needed the Creepshow branding and the Creepshow feel to get people to go, okay, well, at least I know generally what I'm getting from this, even though every single story is a completely original idea. And you got the creep narrating and all of that, like he does. But it's been so much fun. And yeah, we did really well. I think it exceeded all of our expectations, that there was as big of an appetite for Creepshow as there is. So I edited volume one, edited volume two, did a few specials. We actually did a holiday special.
Yeah, the Christmas one. I was like, where is mine? I know I ordered that. And then you got the Joe Hill coming back for more too.
There's the Christmas one, holiday special 2023, featured Christmas, which just made me laugh so much. It's a monster that the kids talk about, that if you don't put up your stockings, he'll eat your toes. It's amazing. It was hilarious. And we got a bunch of good creators on it. So Joe Hill, we just wanted to do something with Joe Hill and felt like it deserved more than a 10-page short story. And that was how the Joe Hill special came about. But yeah, definitely looking at more holidays. I don't want to spoil anything or talk about anything I can't talk about yet, but I think everyone's very, very happy with the success of Creepshow. And it's done everything I think that I was happy with with the anthologies that I worked on at DC, but it's Skybound. So, you know, we've got potentially new originals coming from some of these people. We've got, some of these guys are now working on the Energon Universe stuff. Like it's been a great way to get people in the door and also just work with cool people that we wouldn't have been able to work with for whatever reason. So more holidays. What do you think?
I think you should go for it. I think it would be, I think once again, like the cover thing, you know, that's the hook right there. That's what got me into it originally, was just the play on the holidays. Yeah. I think, do you really need to bother? Well, is there going to be a volume three? So that takes care of the Halloween, really. So I don't know, Valentine's Creepshow. Yeah, that could be hilarious. That could work perfectly. So
I think you're right on the money there, my man. You'd always get like, okay, Valentine's Day, we can do something for Valentine's Day, you know, holiday, Christmas, Hanukkah, you know, winter holiday, I guess.
Thanksgiving.
For way. Like you could do something with that. Ooh, Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday. Oh man.
Thanksgiving doesn't get enough.
Thanksgiving. We gotta do a Thanksgiving one. Yeah. Christmas, you know, Halloween. I mean, I'm sure the market could support a Halloween special, but I do feel like it's sort of redundant to what we're doing. I always had the October issue like be a Halloween, like this was the October issue, and it was, you know, obviously it was what it was. So we'll see.
The first Creepshow story was a Halloween themed, like only take one. So yep. But Thanksgiving never gets enough attention. I mean, you get a fake trailer in a movie, that's all right. But we, you know, Thanksgiving.
Have you seen the Thanksgiving movie? I almost watched it last night. I'm not even kidding. My wife and I were scrolling through. We were like, I don't know. Should we?
I think I might get to it someday. Yeah. So. But cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, like once again, your legacy at DC continues on, and it looks like Creepshow. It's endless and it works. So, you know, it's awesome. I'm just, please continue with the anthologies. At least one person believes them.
You know? Oh yeah. Well, I think a lot of people do. Enough people do that they keep making them, and we're making them at DC. We're making them at Skybound. I think we want to do more. And it really shows the, you know, the strength of the market. I think there's a lot of talk about tough market right now, but you know, there are things that maybe haven't worked in the past that are working now, and maybe just the tastes are changing, and maybe people are after something new, you know. And I think at the very least, these anthologies, because they don't have the pressure of something larger, you can put new ideas in them, and mm-hmm. that's exciting. And whether they fail or succeed is to be determined. But at least you can take a swing that you maybe wouldn't have taken otherwise.
Great. Well, thank you, Alex, and we will talk again. So
thanks, Francis. Anytime.
And I'll be talking to you later. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. See ya.